Now I face out, I hold out, I return to the truth of my life, seeking the seas on the whole moment to now break away. Oh God, let me out, can you let me out, can you set me free from being stuck in the world, save me the last bit in the
Welcome to a brand new episode of the Social Link Podcast. This is episode 11. This is Alex.
This is Anthony.
So, how have you been, dude?
I got something to drink.
In case you guys don't remember, we are pre-recording all these podcasts within one day. Today is April 10th. The previous podcast was also recorded on April 10th, if you were wondering. And that previous episode kind of went a little too long.
But hopefully it won't go too long this time, so.
Hopefully. But, you know, we also had, like, a late start. We had technical issues and stuff. So I will probably blame it on that.
Oh, sure. Blame it on me. No,
I didn't say you. I'm saying, in general, technical difficulties. I'm just saying.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Gotcha.
So let's start. So I'll start with you because I'm curious what you've been playing.
Okay, so I don't want to talk about Final Fantasy X. You know,
considering we just talked about it for like about half an hour.
Yeah. Let's not talk about that game right now. But what I can talk about is I've been doing a lot of virtual console. But there's two things I want to talk about. I want to talk about NES Remix.
Okay.
On the Wii U. Have you heard of NES Remix?
No.
You have not heard of NES Remix? And you sold your Wii U, so you won't get to experience it. NES Remix is a game that was released in December. It's getting its sequel coming out in a couple weeks, NES Remix 2. What it is, it's this really cool Nintendo game where they take a bunch of NES games and they remix them a little bit, right?
Okay.
So they're kind of like the WarioWare games with NES elements.
Already not interested.
Oh, come on.
I don't like WarioWare.
Well, it's not as bad as WarioWare. You don't have to spin boogers in people's mouths or anything.
Well, I'm not. Give me an example.
Okay, so one. They'll give you a series of challenges, and the better you score it is this. So, for example, it's not WarioWare where it switches. It's more like mini challenges. So, if you select the Super Mario Brothers challenges, okay.
Mm-hmm.
There's a challenge that can be pretty difficult later on. Defeat Bowser, okay?
Okay.
Okay, fine. So you have four sections, and the faster you go, the better you go. So first Bowser is typical Bowser, boom, 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 jump over it. But by the time you get to the fourth one, it's that bitch one where he's throwing hammers and shit, and you're small.
Mm-hmm.
So the faster you go through it, the better your time and score your hearts to unlock more stuff.
Okay.
So it's pretty cool. And then there's a main remix area. And that remix area will do trippy stuff. Like, one thing it'll do is it'll allow you to play the first level of Super Mario Brothers in its entirety, right? Mm-hmm. That classic first level. But they'll allow you to play it in the fucking dark.
Okay.
Everything's shadowed out. Okay? There's stuff like that. You don't... Come on. NES Remix is cool. Gotta look it up.
It seems like you're trying to convince me it's cool, but...
Well, it's a unique idea, and it gives a spin to a lot of classic NES games.
It seems it's, again, reliant a lot on, like, nostalgia. Come on, okay. The fact that you're actually asked to play World 1-1 from Mario in the dark... is kind of like saying, okay, you played this many times because we've fucking released this game like, what, 5-6 times already? More than that, but now you should be able to play it with your eyes closed. That is literally what they're saying.
Well, it's hard to explain. There's a lot of things they do with it, okay? And it's not just Mario Brothers. They have Excite Bike, they have Balloon Fight, they have a couple of Donkey Kong. They have Donkey Kong, which I absolutely adore. And they, and I'll talk about Donkey Kong in a second because I have a pet peeve with that game. I'll tell you what it is. And they also have, goddamn Zelda in it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. So they give you those challenges. You do them. They're a lot of fun. You unlock more stuff. You unlock all kinds of artwork. It's a neat little game. It's worth the $15.
Okay.
So that's NES Remix.
Okay.
You're not impressed.
No, I'm not.
Oh, come on.
Really, I'm not impressed. I'm like, this is, sounds like, I don't know. It's just, it's like comparable to like Rhythm Heaven, which I feel like I'm more interested in Rhythm Heaven than doing the same I've been doing like all this time. Like, it's like, oh, look, now you get to play the just the last section of 8-4 and Mario 1, and now you try to get the best time. And I'm like, nope, not interested.
It's more than, it's a little, I don't think I explained it well, but as for Rhythm Heaven, I'd rather play NES Remix, so there you go.
Yeah.
Rhythm Heaven. Anyway, I want to talk about Donkey Kong real quick, okay?
Okay.
I've been playing that, but there's not much to say on that except for this. When Nintendo releases versions of Donkey Kong, it's usually the NES version, right?
Mm-hmm.
I would love to see the actual arcade version be ported over.
Never gonna happen.
Why is that?
Have you seen them port anything other than NES, like any of the arcade stuff over?
No.
There you go.
That's true, because if you think about it, well, that is very true. You know why? Because of a lot of people don't know about the first Punch-Out.
Mm-hmm.
The first Punch-Out is Wireframe Guy, not fucking Little Mac.
Yep. They use Little Mac because it's a limitation on the NES hardware.
Yeah. They can't, because if you look, what's funny is if you look at the original Punch-Out, the arcade version, it looks really good.
Mm-hmm.
For its time.
Yeah.
Because it was run on a arcade hardware.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, yeah. Again, you know, Nintendo has a lot of arcade games that were pretty interesting. You know?
Yeah, I just don't think that they're really going to tap into that history, because they really never did before. And mm-hmm. I'm not really quite sure how much of that is still archived at Nintendo. I mean, I'm pretty sure, like, they could just be like, well, let's get a ROM of that somewhere and then, you know, and then be able to release it. But it's like, I think it's a lot easier for them to do emulation of, you know, their consoles, because, you know, the arcade hardware kind of varies, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which is why I think they're never going to do it.
Yeah. I still would like to see, well, the original arcade version of Donkey Kong is actually very unique, mm-hmm. I think. Because you've played it, right?
No, I haven't, but we did talk about it.
Okay, just real quick, what's unique about it is the way the levels are designed. So you go up, I think, like 1 meter, 2 meter, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
In 1 meter, which is the first stage, it's the classic barrel stage, and then it's the classic end stage where you take out the bolts and knock Donkey Kong's dumb ass out, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's just those two levels. Oh, you're done. You beat the game.
Mm.
Okay, then you go to 2M. So it's the classic barrel stage, then it's another stage, which is sometimes, I think, the conveyor belt level,
mm-hmm.
and then the classic, you know, end stage where you knock Donkey Kong's ass out again.
Right.
Then you go to 3M, and then again, it repeats the process. It does the same two levels, you know, at first cap, end cap. Then the two middle levels, it's the conveyor belt, and then they add, I think, the classic spring level that mm-hmm. you see in other versions, where the springs are bouncing around,
right?
And then so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes it unique, because I think there's like 8 M's until the game starts repeating itself.
Mm-hmm.
And in the NES version, you only get 4 levels.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens is the 4 levels repeat on a higher difficulty. Whereas not only is there a higher difficulty in the arcade version, but they add levels to it.
Right.
So that's why I would like to see an original arcade version of
Donkey Kong.
Donkey Kong. I have one last thing I need to talk about. And this is a game very special to your, at least the sequel to a game. very special to your heart.
Mm-hmm.
This is my game of this series that's special to me, and that's Adventure Island 2.
Okay.
I like Adventure Island 2 a lot. I do. I like it a lot. What I think it's a much better game than the original, considering that the original is a reskinned version of Wonder Boy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, essentially, with that said and done, Adventure Island 2 is an original game. It's very, very... the level design is very similar to what you saw in the first game, because Adventure Island games don't have so much jumps as opposed to enemy and obstacle placement.
Mm-hmm.
That's what differentiates them, say, from Mario, where Mario has a lot of platform jumping.
Mm-hmm.
It's more reliant on enemy placement.
Right.
Right. So, in its level design. As far as that goes, too, it adds a crucial new game mechanic. It adds a inventory system. In this game, you collect little dinosaur buddies that you could ride.
Mm-hmm.
There's a pterodactyl, there's a fire-spitting one, one that whips with his tail, and one that you can swim underwater, which is useful for underwater levels. You collect these little dinosaur friends, and the more you collect, you can take them in the level. So if you get a dinosaur friend, you beat the level, he comes in with you intact, you could store him up and save him for another level.
Hmm.
So it adds a little... It's not the most complex inventory system, but it's useful.
Mm-hmm.
But I will tell you, I am on the second-to-last island on that game, and that game's a fucking bitch right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's becoming fucking insane, like mm-hmm. any other NES game.
Yeah, I remember when I read up on it on Nintendo Power and stuff. It seemed like a really cool game, and you know, admittedly, a lot of the stuff that I saw in Super Mario World, they implemented many years before.
Yeah, I think that game came out a year before Super Mario.
Mm-hmm.
World. And what's funny about that game, the key difference, though, is that you can't really store Yoshis, and then Yoshi only ate shit. And mm-hmm. he kind of changed powers when he ate certain things, like grew wings and stuff.
Yeah.
The thing about Adventure Island 2, though, is you have to carefully think when you want to use the dinosaurs. Like the swimming one, you know, here's an example. The swimming one, he'll jump in the water and swim with you. If you take any other dinosaur into an underwater level...
Mm-hmm.
Take him in, the dinosaur will die.
Oh, geez. They poof
away. So you can only take that one dinosaur in.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to think of, you know, like if it's a lake level, can't take any other dinosaurs in.
Mm-hmm.
Except for that one specific one. And then there's a pterodactyl. And what's funny about this game is it's not like you could think the pterodactyl could fly in the above in the game, go above the game, and you could soar through levels. Nope, they thought of that before. Because if you try to do that, they'll put enemies in the sky.
Oh, jeez. Crazy.
Yeah. So Adventure Island 2 is, I think, one of the best platformers hands down on the NES.
Mm.
And I think it's a much better game than the original.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, compared to the first one, I mean, yeah, it's like night and day.
Yeah. Yeah. And after that, I kind of lost my connection with that series. 3 is very similar. Because mm-hmm. it does have dinosaurs again.
Yes.
And then there's a 4th that we got, but it never came out here. And mind you, that series is called something Takahashi as opposed to Adventure Island.
No, I don't know. I don't remember.
Meijin Takahashi, I think it's called in Japan. And mm-hmm. they got a Meijin Takahashi 4 on the NES.
Mm-hmm.
Or the Famicom. And we never got that one. And of course, we got the Super Adventure Island. And then I think we got Super Adventure Island 2, which I understand is more of an RPG.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was one on the TurboGrafx, and then there's one on the Game Boy, but the one on the Game Boy has the dinosaur mechanic in it. And right. it's actually on Virtual Console on the 3DS.
Interesting.
And then the last one that I know of that came out was actually on the WiiWare. So you could buy it for the Wii.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I don't remember that one very much. I bought it, but I never really played it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it. Adventure Island 2 is fucking cool.
Lots of classic gaming over there.
Yeah. I have to switch my mode. And then I think next week I'll probably be talking about the flamboyant J-pop Man, Fest, that is Final Fantasy X 2.
Jesus Christ. Crazy.
Crazy fun, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's that. What about you?
Okay, so I already talked about Tomb Raider. I didn't actually go back into it, although I did look at the trophies, which are retarded. There is no, like, trophy to replaying it on, you know, like, a harder difficulty. That's one thing, too. It's like, I wish a lot of games would actually do that and kind of, like, ask you to play on a harder difficulty. But and most games do have it, but for some reason, Tomb Raider doesn't. Which kind of is a little bit frustrating, and you know. But in any case, I don't want to keep talking about that game. But I am playing through Bravely Default, as I mentioned in last week's podcast. I am 4 hours in. I am trying to get to the Temple of the Wind, but I got to the Clock Town now. Which, man, that game's artwork just keeps on impressing me over and over. Like, okay, world map is typical world map artwork, but when you get to a town, holy hell, that hand drawn, you know, artwork is really fantastic.
Or a dungeon.
Yeah. What's really interesting about that game, and I talked about this on last week's Shooting from the Hip, is that it evokes a similar style as Final Fantasy XII and Vagrant Story in terms of its, you know, character design and some of the artwork. You know, like the quality of the artwork is on par with those games, and I think it's great because. You know, like, it really sets it apart from all the other games out there that are JRPGs, which is, again, I feel is one of the biggest problems with JRPGs, is that there's not enough identity with JRPGs. And, you know, you release a game that looks like this every mm-hmm. 2 or 3 years or so, you don't necessarily homogenize, you know, the other games within that artist or,
right.
you know, genre or what have you, or series.
I love that guy's designs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they, you know, Vagrant Story, Tactics Ogre.
Mm-hmm.
And what else has he done?
Final Fantasy 12.
Yeah, okay. I thought Tetsuya Nomura did some designs.
No, he did not. Akihiko Yoshida did that. Which he also did, of course, you know, Ogre Battle and Final Fantasy Tactics, Bravely Default, and, you know, it's a great game.
Final Fantasy Tactics.
Mm-hmm.
Love that fucking game.
Yeah. So, I played that a lot. I mean, I don't want to retread the same ground as we did last week. But the one game that I actually wanted to kind of lean into, which is actually the topic for this week's Shooting from the Hip, is Lego Marvel Super Heroes. And
ooh.
Originally, we were actually going to talk about Captain America in this episode, but we decided against that and actually talk about it in last week. So, you know, as far as, you know, this game goes, I'll say what I said in the recording. I am not a Lego gamer. I have never, ever played a Lego game continuously from beginning to end. So this should be an interesting segment, wouldn't you think?
I would think so, too. You know what, too? I'm with you. I'm not a Lego gamer either. I have a bunch of them because I have an 8-year-old and he loves that shit. But I don't know. I'm not really big on the Lego games. But they're great for kids, though.
Yep. So here's my Shooting from the Hip segment, which is, you know, which features Lego Marvel Superheroes.
Hey, gang. Welcome to another episode of Shooting from the Hip. This week, I want to talk about a game that I've been playing a lot with my roommate, and something that Anthony is probably going to be interested in. It's called Lego Marvel Super Heroes. Now, I have to put a disclaimer out. I haven't played any of the previous Lego games extensively. There was a time that I owned Lego Indiana Jones with my Xbox 360, and I didn't really play it. And I actually only played the demo of the Lego Star Wars game, so I probably am not the person to talk to with regards to, you know, maybe comparing this to other games in the series. But I can tell you something. I am hooked. I definitely am hooked in the LEGO series. And it shows the developers' maturity from when they made, the first Toy Story game on the Dreamcast way back when, all the way up till now. They've really honed in on the craft and mastered what it takes to make children's games. Now, if you've ever played that Toy Story game, you'll know that it's actually a very difficult platformer. But safe to say Traveler's Tales has learned a lot, and I wanted to share some of the really awesome things that you can expect if you wanted to play something like LEGO Marvel Super Heroes. In this particular case, I played the PlayStation 4 version, and I actually traded in some games. And let me give you a background to this. My roommate and I actually watched Captain America: The Winter Soldier this past weekend, and I was in a Marvel itch. I wanted to do something Marvel, I wanted to watch something Marvel, and I wasn't really sure what that meant. So this past Monday, or Monday of, you know, April something, I mean, basically, like, this is, we're recording this, of course, prior to April 15th, I actually decided, okay, I think my roommate is going to enjoy Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3, and I'm pretty sure we're both going to enjoy Marvel Ultimate Alliance. Couldn't be that bad, right? Well, I popped in Marvel Ultimate Alliance and on a PlayStation 3, and it had shitty frame rates. I mean, least of all, you know, that didn't have trophies. I mean, Activision never patched it in. But even so, the fact that the frame rate was shit, and of course, the first few enemies we faced, we could hardly discern from the actual textures in the background, was pretty much a death knell to that game for us. And with regards to Marvel Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3, it's a mashathon. I mean, basically my roommate one-handedly several rounds and stuff like that. And, you know, pretty much I was like, alright, well, that's fine, but I'm not getting the same satisfaction as I would maybe watching a movie or, you know, or, I don't know, like maybe, you know, indulging in like a Marvel comic, like reading it. So, very niche games. Very, very niche. And the main thing that I wanted to do by buying, like, a Marvel game was to kind of share the experience with my roommate, because we do game a lot. We played a lot of Diablo 3 last year, and we want to share a game that's actually not only enjoyable for both of us, but also something with a little bit more depth. Well, LEGO Marvel Super Heroes does not have the same depth as Diablo 3. In fact, you'd be foolish to think that LEGO Marvel Super Heroes has the same depth as Diablo 3. But what it does have is the amazing amount of different costumes and different kinds of Marvel characters that's available for play. Now, I also bought two packs that's available for purchase on the PlayStation Store, which cost about $1.99 and $4.99 each, which had Asgardian characters and as well as some other characters. And that's totally fine by me. I think that for the price that they're asking, I am totally down for that much, for additional characters to play. But going to the gameplay, the story, well, actually, let's go to the story, because you're probably curious about it. LEGO games in general have a very tongue-in-cheek kind of treatment of their source material. In other words, a lot of the times they make fun of the fact that, you know, like there's just some idiosyncrasies with a lot of characters in, you know, in the games that they are, you know, sourcing. For example, in LEGO Marvel Super Heroes, it's what's really interesting is, like, you know, you get very interesting moments in the game where, you know, I don't know, maybe, like, Iron Man would make fun of Wolverine's, like, sideburns, you know? Which, to me, is kind of funny, because that's, like, yeah, totally, like, that's not really in vogue, or in trend, or in fashion, or what have you. So it's like, why is Logan still keeping those mutton chops? You know, so it's really funny to kind of see them interact in this way. And, of course, the depictions of all the Marvel characters are very cutesy. I mean, you'd never use the words cute when describing the Incredible Hulk, but in this particular game, it's actually very fitting. All the Marvel characters are actually very interesting because a lot of them have sort of like these, you know, similarities, and I'll call them classes for now. Like Wolverine and Spider-Man, two very completely different people. You wouldn't lump them together, but they have actually very similar powers. Like, Wolverine actually has like some sort of almost Spidey sense-like thing that Spider-Man also has. But, of course, he doesn't have the web-swinging that Spider-Man can do. And, of course, you know, I haven't gotten far enough in the game to actually know whether or not they've made fun of the fact that Spider-Man's webs just attach to the sky or clouds or what have you. But, either way, I expect them to kind of make fun of that sometime soon. With regards to the gameplay, later on in the game, after maybe about an hour or two of gameplay, you do get the ability to explore the S.H.I.E.L.D. helicarrier, and you also get to explore New York, which is actually the main setting of the game, and it seems like a lot of the movesets and the jokes are kind of based off of the Avengers movie. Of course, remember that this came out in November, so not a lot of source material from from the new Captain America movie has been used. But what's really fun about this game is that just the amount of sheer destruction that you can do. And I think a lot of LEGO game veterans can attest to this. And another thing, too, that's really fascinating is, of course, when you do break certain LEGO bricks, there's these little LEGO bricks that kind of like just kind of dance around. And they're usually an indication that you can, you know, use them for, you know, for some sort of, you know, like world event later on, or immediately for that matter. For example, you fight the Sandman pretty early on in the game, but there's these little pieces that you get from destroying an item in the world that will actually allow you to build a water cannon to kind of soften up the Sandman's sand wall. So those are the kinds of things that you kind of get. Each character actually has like an aim functionality, and a lot of the items in the game are locked behind things that can only unlock by actually having a specific character and then aiming their specific choice of weapons to it. So there's a lot of replay value later on by going into free play, and that's actually one of the reasons why you should go back into free play mode and unlock a lot of the other characters. And it's really, really cool that they actually have that option. Now, one gripe that I have with this game is, and this is something that I had already expressed to my roommate, is that when you're playing with somebody else on the PlayStation 4, in the same game, if you get a trophy, the other person doesn't. So that person needs to kind of start their own progression through the game in order to get credit, which kind of sucks. But it's a good excuse to kind of play through the game. Then again, there's a lot of collectibles, so I'm not sure if you really want to do that on another account. It would have been really nice if the second player was able to get trophies as well, because, you know, let's face it, that sounds just really fun, you know, if you both kind of, like, get trophies for things that you both really work hard for. And the other kind of complaint that I have is the dynamic split-screen mode, which really is useless, in my opinion. It's cool because it allows you to be in the same screen at the same time, but at the same time, it splits the screen in a very weird and awkward way. And this is kind of a bad thing, because sometimes you get a sliver of, you know, the action. Another complaint that I have is the camera. A lot of the times, the camera just does not fill the screen, you know, does not focus on items that require focusing. And this is when we actually changed it to the non-dynamic mode, the static one. And I think it's because of the game design. They really want a lot of players to use the dynamic split screen for whatever reason. I understand this, but I think no one really tested the other mode out. And maybe, you know, the testers were just too used to the actual gameplay of the game, and, you know, everything else just kind of clicked automatically. Overall, if you're really looking for a good game to play with a friend, or, you know, a roommate in my case, or a partner, I definitely recommend LEGO Marvel Super Heroes. You can't go wrong with that. If you do have a PlayStation 4, I do highly recommend it. It runs at a very stable frame rate, and a lot of the shaders that they use are actually on par with a lot of the CG that they used for the game, which is kind of funny that we're still using CG, but I totally understand why we still do that. But definitely, if you're looking for a very interesting game to play, I would definitely recommend LEGO Marvel Super Heroes. Again, it doesn't have the same depth as a lot of games out there, but this is one of the few games that you can play in co-op with a friend, a partner, or a roommate. So I hope you guys enjoyed this episode of Shooting from the Hip, and let's get back to the show.
So yeah, I like the game a lot. It's a really fun co-op experience. I mean, there's not a lot of those like hanging around these days, but you know, that game definitely delivers in spades, what can I say?
You mean where it encourages you to make friends digitally, where you can probably never meet them, as opposed to your real-life friends that are actually important to you?
Actually, the funny thing, you mentioned that. There is no online multiplayer component to this game, I don't think.
Wait, really?
I don't think so.
Huh.
I have to check. But I don't think that there is. I know that a lot of the LEGO games actually don't have that, and they do just kind of encourage local play. I think that's their big thing. Let's see.
Interesting.
Let's see. Does it have online play? I'm like looking it up right now. But I mean, what do you think? Like from what I mentioned and stuff. I mean, you obviously, you know, like listened to the recording and stuff.
I did. And again, that's the thing. You know, you're talking about, you're looking for games for you and your roommate to play, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the key thing about the LEGO games, I think, is keeping that tradition of co-op play, local co-op play, which is pretty much as dead as the start button is, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. That's the thing, is local co-op play should not be taken away. You should not take that away.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, let's be honest here, it works. You got to figure out what games it works for and what games it doesn't. Mm-hmm. I'll be honest, something like Call of Duty or Battlefield, I don't think local co-op would play very well.
No.
But something like Lego or a beat-em-up, like the Dungeons & Dragons games, you know, that came out again last year that I love so much, mm-hmm. that has local, which is awesome.
Right.
You know, things like that, I think. And I think, you know, Nintendo's kind of on the weird end of the spectrum with this, is, you know, they like local co-op play a little too much. I think they should have both.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of weird, right? Because I'm very critical about Nintendo for not having online. But the thing is, this particular game, like, I'm kind of okay with it. I think also the reason why I'm okay with LEGO Marvel Super Heroes being, a local kind of game is it is targeting towards a specific audience, right? Kids and mm-hmm. stuff. But what's interesting, though, is I've discovered that there's a huge amount of people who are adults that actually love the game as well. So I was kind of like, oh, that's why, you know, I kind of considered getting this game to begin with, because it was like, okay, so we don't really have anything else out there in terms of co-op gameplay, which is why, of course, I've mentioned that I've reverted back to board gaming, you know, like, so that, right. you know, I can play games with my roommate. But in this particular case, it just works really well, and there's enough depth, in the game, so that it's kind of fun to play. And, you know, like, it's a game that you can literally pop in and kind of, like, just, you know, have fun around and, you know, explore town and, you know. And I think one of the bigger, and I don't think I was clear about it in my recording, but in the segment, but the New York that's featured in the game is open world.
Really?
Yes. Fully.
That's very nice.
Fully open world. So you both can go in very different directions, and you can do whatever the hell you want.
I like that.
Yeah. It's fantastic. Like, you know, so one of the missions, you know, sent us off to Rikers Island, and I had to take a boat to get there. And then my roommate just pretty much, like, used, like, Iron Man, and then she flew all the way over there. Or
that's pretty cool.
Or if you're Captain America, you just swim across the water.
I wanted to play a LEGO game, too. There's one that interests me. It came out about a year ago for the Wii U.
Mm-hmm.
Is that LEGO City, what was it, LEGO City Undercover? Because it's not necessarily franchise-based.
Mm-hmm.
And I always wanted to play that one. And then the only other one I really played a lot of was DC Superheroes.
Right. I heard that the Batman one, the LEGO Batman stuff, and the Marvel Superheroes are the best ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because the LEGO DC Superheroes is pretty cool, because I know you can drive you can unlock the different vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think they even have renditions of, like, the Batmobile. Like, I think they even have one where it's the 66... you know, Adam West Batman one and things like that.
Well, that's the thing with those LEGO games, especially the branded ones, which are fantastic, is that they can freely make fun of themselves with those games, you know, or rather make fun of the franchises without having to worry about continuity or whatnot, because it is a goofy world, you know? Like, like the plot of, like, the LEGO Marvel Superheroes is that Galactus is hungry. He sends Silver Surfer to get food and find worlds. He gets shot down. His surfboard basically turns into cosmic cubes, or cosmic bricks, as they're called.
What?
So, and Dr. Doom is trying to collect all the cosmic bricks to take over the world. There you go. End of story.
Huh.
It's a very compelling storyline, and it's riddled with a lot of funny moments and stuff. Like, I think it was, like, Tony Stark was making fun of, like, Wolverine's, like, mutton chops. Because, you know, it's like, it's going out of style. It's like, why does he still have it? You know, it's like, it's kind of ridiculous. But, you know, that's something that you'd expect from the LEGO, you know, the LEGO games. I know that actually some of the lower rated LEGO games have been the non-franchise ones, specifically the one that you mentioned, which is LEGO Undercover and the LEGO Movie game.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's because those don't have a rich backstory to them or rich history. That's why. And we talked about history a lot in the previous episode. And this is kind of proof in the pudding, pretty much. And I, you know, for me personally, I still want to get the Star Wars, you know, like complete saga and stuff, like the Lego one. And I don't know, like I think I'm hooked on this series. I really like them. I really like them a lot. The Lego games.
Yeah, maybe you should find Lego Batman 2 sometime.
Yeah, I heard that's really, really good, so.
Pretty cool, pretty cool. Mm-hmm. So what's next on the agenda?
So, okay, so the next thing that we have in the agenda is your rant. So do you want to give us a little background about that?
Yeah, I'm getting frustrated with people misconceiving modern gaming for what it's really not.
Which is?
Which is nothing but FPSs. People are still saying that.
Hmm.
And it's nothing but pay to play or, you know, stuff like that. So it's kind of frustrating because the gaming world is a lot bigger than it ever has been.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the amount of games that are available, and I'm not just talking console retail games, I'm talking all over. PC, phones, mm-hmm. the handhelds, and of course the consoles.
Right.
Is staggering.
Mm-hmm.
And you just need to do a little research to find out what you need. So, I'm going to go bitch for a second, okay?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
All right, so with this rant, I want to talk about people who are nostalgia fucking whores. Now, let me explain what this means. There's a lot of people that I see on the internet, gaming is so much better back then, la la la. Here's the deal, okay? We live in a different age. Things aren't what they used to be, and in some ways they are, and I'll explain something to you about how they used to be. Here's the deal. Video games have changed. You know, the way we get them, there's digital, there's DLCs, that type of thing. But not every game has DLC. You'd be surprised if there's a number of them that don't. Not every game is free to pay. That model, I don't think, is ever going to overtake full-fledged games that you can buy. And like I said, there's a lot of games that don't have any DLC. There's a good little game that came out about 2 years ago called Journey, and it has no DLC, and it's very, very playable. So, there you go. But there are not many good games. There are plenty of good games. You're just not looking. If you believe that we're dominated by FPSs, as much as I despise a lot of those FPSs, those so-called military shooters, they are not the majority of what is out there. A lot of you complaining aren't fucking looking for shit. Go look. Do some research. It's not going to fucking kill you. I mean, you know, there's tons of indie games out there. There's tons of Japanese games that go under the radar. There's tons of Western games that go under the fucking radar. You know, there's a lot of even better FPSs that are fucking ignored. But nope, we have to go look. Look, do some research. It's not going to kill you. You know, it's not going to kill you. We're getting games that are fucking re-released, too. And if you really are desperate for the past, there's these things called virtual consoles, PS1 Classics, you know, even Xbox Classics if you want to go even more recent. Look. There's a lot of stuff out there. And if you're complaining that gaming sucks, it's not. This is actually a very good time to be a gamer. And for those that are saying JRPGs are dead or not, no. JRPGs are much like they used to be 20 years ago. But, as you know, in their current state, you know, they're very niche. Which is fine by me, because that's how they were in the early 90s in a world dominated by platformers, fighting games, and, you know, side-scrolling brawlers. I mean, that was the world back then. Now it's FPSs, okay? That's the way FPSs or fucking, you know, open-world games. That's just the way the world is. But those games don't dominate it. So, next time you decide to complain about it, how about get off your lazy ass and do some fucking research? All right, what did you think, Alex?
I think as far as nostalgia goes, I mean, it's a weird thing, right? I mean, we constantly talk about Nintendo relying too much on nostalgia. And maybe there's a correlation between both. I mean, maybe a lot of people just don't like the too much complexity of current games. Because if you really think about it, the kinds of controllers that we're getting aren't decreasing in the number of buttons. They're actually increasing. Like, if you think about this generation, you know, like, of games, you now have, in, you know, like, for the PlayStation 4 as a good example, we now have, in addition to the face buttons, the triggers, and the, you know, the bumpers, the D-pad, and the two sticks, now we have to also worry about two, like, one big touchpad and the touchpad as a button in itself. Mm. You know, like, we're not making games any more accessible to other people than they were several years ago, or even like decades ago for that matter. Because if you remember, the reason why we jumped into video games, other than it's a cool toy, but it's also because we only had to deal with a D-pad, a select and start button, and a B and an A button.
We couldn't watch Netflix.
Well, there's that too. But I wonder if there's a part of the community that really just, you know, likes to have the simplicity of older games back into, you know, the current environment of games. Like,
I think that exists. I think a lot of those simple games are still existing.
Mm-hmm.
I think they do.
Yeah, well, I agree, because I was also recently playing, like, Rayman Legends on my PS4, and that's a fucking fantastic platformer, and that's very simple. You got, like, a float button, you got a jump, you got a button that basically uses this third-party kind of character. You know, it's a great platformer, and it's basic as fuck.
Yeah.
And I really think that there's going to be a, you know, kind of a move towards that, and I've always mentioned this before to you, and Nolan Bushnell was famously quoted actually, he was credited with this quote, and this is something that I've always told you about, is that great games are easy to learn, but difficult to master.
Exactly. Why has chess endured so much, or checkers?
Yeah. So, the simpler the gameplay, you know, I mean, there is inherent depth that you can instill in a game by making the mechanics simple enough, but making some of the other elements have so much more depth. For a platformer, it's your typical running and jumping, but it's the level that creates the complexity, because you can have, like, you can hide different things in levels and stuff, you know, and because you want to make the actual gameplay of the character a lot simple. And that's not, you know, that doesn't apply all the time. And arguably, like, for a first-person shooter, it's pretty damn simple. It, you know, like, if you think about it, there's the two sticks that basically control your orientation and movement. And then there's, you know, there's your typical aim down sight, which is zoom. And then, and then shooting, and then the grenade buttons, and then changing the weaponry, and then all the other face buttons, you know. But the thing is, in order to even get to that level of complexity, you need to be able to walk through and kind of learn how you position your buttons, to be able to know, like, you know, like, some standards in gaming. Like, a lot of people don't know that the X button is actually used a lot, you know, or the position of the X button, you know, on the PlayStation controller, or the A button in the Xbox 360 is standard, like, in the West. Whereas the position of the A button in Nintendo platforms is traditionally the back button in Japan and you know, other territories, you know, so it takes a little bit of learning to be able to get used to something like that, you know.
Remember Final Fantasy VII, you know, used that format.
Yes.
It was circle to confirm and X to be back, which was a little unusual even for its time. Of course, that was changed with 8, but
yeah.
But I mean that's an interesting thing, you know. That's just, I guess, how those companies roll. So,
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting, like, how far we've come from that time. But going back to your point, though, I feel that, you know, it's very difficult for a lot of people to find games that appeal to them, and I think that is more a question of where are you getting in your information, as opposed to, you know, like, not actively looking for a game. I don't think it's laziness on their part. I think that a lot of websites and information sources are just not adequate or able to handle that sort of inquiry. You know,
well, that goes to why I'm so critical of our gaming journalism, because I think they're biased as fuck.
It's not bias. The thing is, when you want to make money, which these are all businesses, right? You have to cater to the people who actually are most likely to come back to your website. In that particular case, the people who will return to your website are a lot younger than what people think they do. Like 24 years old and below, and some people in their 30s. But generally, you know, people who are 24 and below are avid gamers, and they're the ones who actually have a lot of time on their hands to actually visit video game sites and actually comment and give their opinions and stuff. Which, of course, naturally, since a lot of those gamers are pretty seasoned with, you know, the industry already, and it's many facets, that's where they're targeting all their articles and what have you. But there are, there is a segment of the population, of course, and, you know, these are, I would assume, these are the nostalgia gamers who basically say, like, yeah, back in the day, they were really good and stuff. Well, the reason why they're probably like that is because they don't have anybody relative to them that can actually tell them, like, well, look, there's this game that was released recently. It's a brand new game that harkens back to X game that you really like. Not a lot of websites do that. And typically, they're very highbrow in terms of their verbiage and whatnot. And there's that, only
that's hard to tell with their tastes.
Or no, it's hard. No, I'm not talking about taste. I'm talking about that they're aiming their content to a particular crowd, which is not friendly to people who are maybe wanting to come back to games or wanting to start gaming. You know, if I basically told my aunt to go to, you know, GameSpot, she will have absolutely no fucking clue what to do. Like, not even, not just for the layout, but what are they talking about? You know, like, okay, so it's similar to when I actually started researching board games. No fucking clue about anything about board games. Even when we both talked about it, I had no fucking clue about board gaming. So it's a lot of trial by fire, you know? And unfortunately, in this day and age, not a lot of people can spend the money to do a trial by fire, you know? So that being said, I think that with Gamer Horizon, we try to simplify it as much as we can so that people won't get too overwhelmed with, you know, getting into gaming and stuff. Yes, we cover news. We have a lot of reviews and whatnot, but we are open to the idea of people being new to gaming. And we're hoping that, you know, like, if somebody does find our site, that we're actually doing due diligence to be able to, you know, express ourselves properly in much, you know, in a way that makes sense to a wide variety of gamers, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's why I'm with you guys, so I'm down with that. But I still think it's laziness in some degree, so.
And in a way, this actually kind of ties in with our drive-by segment for this week.
Ooh.
Yeah. So, when we grow up, which we are grown-ups, something basically attacks us from nowhere that we all have to face. And it's called responsibility. Responsibility is a direct correlation or direct result of being an adult. And my drive-by segment is all about adulthood and gaming. So let's take a look.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Drive-By. This edition is a little bit personal because it does involve something that's really dear, near and dear to me, which is adulthood. Adulthood and gaming are two very opposing things, right? On one hand, when we were teenagers and we were young, we had to deal with our own societal pressures, like in high school and elementary school, and trying to climb that social ladder there, or stay put, or not be noticed. When we're adults, that social ladder becomes a lot more global and a lot more municipal in a way. Not only do we have to deal with that sort of thing in our careers, but also our local communities and what have you. Well, what does that mean? Well, that means we're getting less time for our gaming. And I know some of you who are already in college and what have you are already getting less time to devote with gaming. Sure, it's still a lot more than it ever was when we were like in our teens and when we were kids, especially since we can now afford a lot of these video game consoles like the PlayStation 4 and Xbox One and the Wii U. But I'm in a very different position than most of you. In fact, when I started a previous generation, I was in college. I was able to afford the Xbox 360, the Wii, and the PlayStation 3. But I find myself now only able to afford one, the PlayStation 4. And to a much different degree, the 3DS XL. Now, a lot of my friends have asked me, well, are you going to get the Xbox One? And I said, well, it's $500, and I really don't have a lot of space for the Kinect. Which they seem to tout as this, like, really incredible device that everybody's going to use. I'm skeptical about this, because it seems like Microsoft made this device in a vacuum, and is really intended for houses rather than apartments. Because unless you're, like, in a really quiet neighborhood, which I'm not in, there's constantly, like, you know, little boys, like, skateboarding back and forth in front of our apartment. The Kinect doesn't really work that well in those cases. Now, I'm not here to talk about the inferiorities of the Kinect, because that's not really the point of this. The point of this is, I bought a PlayStation 4 with the intention of playing a lot of Sony's titles. Sony's titles are the ones that really appeal to me over the past two generations, and I find myself playing the system a lot more, and also, you know, appreciating the amount of games that are on the PlayStation Plus service. But not only that, I just don't have enough time to play any of the exclusives that I have on the Xbox One, or rather, what I would want to play on the Xbox One. I simply don't have enough time to master something like Killer Instinct or Street Fighter anymore. Now, this is funny to me, because I actually spent a lot of time playing Mortal Kombat. And Mortal Kombat, you know, like, was a fairly easy game to learn. But I never really was inclined to, how should I put this, expand on that knowledge, so to speak. In other words, I didn't feel like I need to go to a tournament or what have you to kind of prove my, I don't know, my skill to other people. It was good enough that I spent some time online and kind of, you know, learned the ropes, so to speak. You know, and be decent at it. But I don't have that time anymore. And that was a long time ago, even. 2011? Yeah. That's how long ago Mortal Kombat was. And if you want to consider this, again, 2005, 2006, I was in college, and I was able to pay for all three platforms that came out at that time, which is crazy to me. But I also had a lot of time. You know, I was in college. I only was taking four classes, and they were all art classes. I was able to, like, spend a lot of time just dicking around playing video games. And if I was, like, you know, and if I had, like, a deadline for, like, an art class, I'd do it at the last minute. Cram sessions. But I face a completely different landscape now that I'm an adult. I have a 40-hour work week with an additional hour for lunch that is unpaid, which, by the way, a lot of jobs are like that, in case you don't know. And while I'm making a lot more money than I was when I was a teenager, I just simply have no time. Now, that's not entirely true, right? I could cut off, like, you know, hours of my day when I'm, like, sleeping, or, you know, like, maybe cutting down social time. But there's a reason why I have to increase my social time, and I have to increase all these other aspects of my life, because I am building probably, like, a hobby, or rather a dream. That dream is basically Gamer Horizon, right, that you're on right now, or probably, like, downloaded this podcast from. And to me, that's really rather important, because I want Gamer Horizon to be successful. But I can't do that by playing video games. And this is kind of like a weird dilemma, if you think about it, because we love video games, but we also want to be able to expand its reach. And the only way that I can do this, and how the other people on the website can do this, is to socialize, you know, to make it viral. So that means spending a lot more time in conventions, or considering that, and also, you know, peddling our wares and doing other things like building merchandise and what have you, and trying to figure out how we can make this sustainable in the long term. Sustainable in a sense that we're able to pay for everything, like hosting and whatnot. We do love writing. But I digress, and this is quite the tangent. The bottom line is, there are a lot of reasons why people aren't able to game a lot. And there are reasons why, you know, I can't get the Xbox One or the Wii U anymore, or I've sold them, you know, or what have you. We all have various reasons. And yes, a lot of this means that we have to protect our investment. We have to basically justify the PlayStation 4 over everything else. The reason why we have to justify the Xbox One over everything else. The reason why we have to justify the Wii U, because we spent our hard-working selves and our money to be able to afford these things. We have to justify these to other people. And that's why we kind of run into these arguments. But the fact of the matter is that you need to put yourself in other people's shoes. And it's a much more... You can create a much more interesting conversation that way if you empathize with other people. Sure, you can be like Anthony and just be stubborn, you know. But at least he listens to other people's opinions. And he does give feedback on them. Even though, of course, he's not always right. But that's what it is being an adult, right? It's boring as shit. But it doesn't have to be. And to kind of close this, I wanted to tell you guys something that happened between me and Anthony last year. Last year, he basically said that school was taking up too much of my time. Of his time. Excuse me. I just laughed at him. Because I told him, like, look, you're not socializing. You're not trying to meet a lot of people. You're not dating. You're not trying to think of getting a house. You're not working 40 hours a week. And out from the house, like, 45 hours. Like, this is in subject of Grand Theft Auto 5. I told him, spend at least 1 hour a day playing video games. And see if it works. See if, you know, if somehow, like, you're still able to keep your hobby. Because last year, Anthony was not into video games at all, which is crazy, right? But the fact of the matter is, he eventually got in. And if you do love video games, regardless of how adult you can be, or how responsible you need to be, you'll be able to put in an hour or two, at least, each day. You know, whether it's, like, through a 3DS, or, you know, a home console. You know, if you love the hobby, you'll stick with it. And if you hate the drama, you don't have to go. You don't have to deal with it. That's the beauty of this hobby. So, I guess, consider this rant as a warning for the people who are in their late teens to early to mid 20s. There's a whole world of time wasting that's happening, or that's going to happen within the next few years of your life. Maybe become a better time manager. Who knows? But it is coming, regardless of whether you want to or not.
Yeah, so that's pretty much, like, my thoughts on the whole thing. And it's like, it's something that's been kind of, like, on my mind lately, because there's a lot of insensitivity that's been going on with regards to, you know, like, you know, journalism and whatnot, which is, it's kind of funny, because it's like, you know, we talked about in a previous segment, or, you know, like, how the games media could be insensitive, but I think that it's just a general lack of empathy in this industry that's kind of ruining it. And I feel that, you know, it's difficult for a lot of us to be able to kind of put ourselves in other people's shoes and kind of understand where they're coming from. And mm-hmm. I think there's a certain maturity that happens when we do grow up, because we don't have as much time, you know, anymore with games as we were kids. And so we're forced to take different measures and choosing our allegiances, so to speak, in the console wars, you know? So,
yep. Console wars. Yay.
So what do you think about the whole thing? Adulthood in gaming?
Well, it's interesting because you don't have the time. And I sure as hell don't have the time I used to have, especially when I first met you, you know? Mm. But the cool thing is, you know, I could share those experiences with my kid, though, which is a good thing. One of the best things that's happened with me gaming-wise, and I will say this is probably going to go down in my gaming history, is probably Pokemon X and Y. Because it's done two things, you know. Not only is it the best game in those series, technically, but it's, you know, it's something my kid and I do, because he has X and I have Y. And we have a lot of battles, and he'll, you know, it's a lot of fun little banter between you and your kid, and sharing those games is part of being an adult, I would say, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like with Pokemon X and Y, you know, my Charizard's Mega Evolution looks different than his, and he thinks his looks cooler, and we have a cool little banter about it. I mean, it brings us closer in that sense, mm-hmm. if you use games in the right context. As opposed to the wrong context, which is sitting here in your ass, screaming racial epithets because your life sucks in Call of Duty. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a certain responsibility with your game playing and your game sharing you should do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a responsibility to it, especially when you have a child.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's an easy way to grow up. You know, like once you have kids, it's like, okay, all that, you know, there's a certain maturity that needs to happen in order for you to kind of move on, you know?
Yeah. 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 And I mean, it's been pleasurable. You know, he and I were playing Final Fight the other day.
Nice.
That's a good one, too, Final Fight. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's a lot, right? There's a lot of ways that you can kind of share a lot of experiences with your kid and stuff. And mm-hmm. I feel that, you know, I mean, again, like, having children is just one facet of adulthood that pretty much, you know, will happen to you. But there's also, you know, the bills and stuff, your own rent, paying for your own place, living with a partner, you know, like, and living with a roommate and stuff. It's like, it's a lot of small things, especially like when you're working a 40-hour week. That usually takes a toll on you, whether you like, you know, whether you like your job or not. It's still exhausting. Like, I have a friend whose job is to test video games for 40 hours a week, even more. And the last thing he wants to do is to go, when he goes home, is play video games. You know?
Right.
That's crazy that you can get so tired when you're an adult that you won't even think about wanting to play a video game.
Yep. It happens.
Mm-hmm.
It happens. I've been there.
Yeah. So
maybe I lost a lot of game playing because of it last year or so.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Still hardly touched Bioshock Infinite and fucking Tomb Raider.
What do you mean hardly never touched?
Oh, I touched them both. I played a good hour of each.
Really?
Yeah.
Even Tomb Raider?
Yeah.
I like how you're just like in a very non-committal like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
I need to play Tomb Raider.
Yeah, you do. I keep fucking telling you, like, I made that like my game of the year from fucking last year and you didn't play it. Shame on you.
Yeah, it beat out GTA 5.
Well, I mean, I still like GTA 5, but didn't necessarily like, you know, like warm up to it.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So anyways, I know that we wanted to talk about gaming peripherals, but I think we can easily both answer that. The answer is no. Like, basically, yeah. Like, we have, like, this thing where it says, like, this, you know, is there, like, still, you know, like, what is the importance of, like, gaming peripherals? I think that was, like, our subject.
Can I take it a step further than that real quick?
Okay.
Can I say they never, because this is why I wanted to do it, mm-hmm. this segment? I'll say they were never relevant.
Never relevant?
Not really. Like, well, okay, let's look at the NES days. Look how much crap there was. I mean, the power glove, that fucking speaking one, that fucking helmet thing from Mattel, remember that?
Well, if you're talking strictly about that era, I would have agreed with you, but the previous generation basically proved that peripherals do have a place in gaming. I mean, we're talking about like all the music games that you don't like, but everybody else does.
Yeah.
That's why they sold millions. And then and then all the fighting sticks that were sold for all the fighting games that were released in the previous gen.
Okay, I'll take it back. I'll take it back. Okay. Fighting sticks I can respect. Fighting game pads I can respect. I'm cool with those. I'm thinking more gimmicky shit.
Okay.
You know, like fucking fishing rod controllers and shit like that.
Well, I mean, okay, then that's just kind of like, you know, that's almost like, yeah, that I don't know.
That Tony Hawk game.
I mean, it's pretty obvious. Well, not all of those are terrible, though. Like, the Shaun White snowboarding stuff with using the Wii Fit balance board was actually pretty decent.
Okay.
I mean, you know, all things considered, still pretty decent peripheral. Not the best, but still pretty decent. It still gave you the impression that you were snowboarding. You know, so I don't know. It's a tough call. I mean, I really don't want to get into it because I feel like obviously the answer is it depends on the peripheral. But even then, you know, the Wii peripherals are arguably okay too. Like the, you know, the Motion Plus and all that stuff. It's they're still pretty good. Even the fishing stuff.
The fishing stuff. Oh yeah. Shit.
They were still pretty good. So
I guess it got ridiculous in some regards.
Well, they did, but it's like they used it well. I mean, that's the thing, right? Like, it's okay for you to have a very specialized controller, provided that you have a really good game that you can use it with. Like my steering wheel. Like, I bought that thing and used it for so many games, and the experience is just unparalleled. I cannot play a driving game, you know, without that steering wheel now, because it's a different. It's like bringing the arcade to my house.
Yes, I forgot about steering wheels.
See?
Okay, to be fair, I forgot. Okay, but I'm, you know, when I think of peripherals, I think of shit.
You're not thinking of the right peripherals, because peripherals encompasses more than just shit.
Okay, there's some cool ones, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But when I think of them, I think of the power glove and crap like that, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, the power glove is bad, dude, but, you know, power glove and... What about, like, the guns? Super Scope? The Justifier?
Well, okay, you're basically, like... No,
I want to know your opinion on those.
They were cool. The light guns. They were pretty fucking cool.
Okay, I fucking take it back. There are cool peripherals and there's crap. There you go.
This is why I didn't want to have this conversation, because most of the peripherals, most of them, are actually really fucking cool.
Okay. There you go. I'll concede that. That was
the fastest fucking discussion we've ever had on this podcast.
Because usually it's you and I being stubborn and not.
Yeah, but then again, but now it's like, wait, you completely forgot everything else that has happened within the past 8 years. Okay, yeah. All right, Anthony.
I kind of stayed traditional during the last 8 years, so I guess
not like, so I much. No, you were not. No.
How?
No.
How did I not?
What do you mean traditional?
Just a traditional controller.
Well, yes, but, you know, I don't necessarily think that, you know, traditional would be the right verbiage for it. Controller-based gameplay would be much more appropriate.
Okay, there you go.
Okay, so let's go to emails, because we do have one email with multiple answers, or, multiple questions.
All right.
This is by Mike. So, the first question is... Do you think that these upcoming video game series like Titanfall, Watch Dogs, and Destiny are going to become over-milked series just like Call of Duty, Lego games, Assassin's Creed, Skylanders, Angry Birds, etc.?
Jesus!
That's too early to tell. Right?
I love the list, though.
I know.
Jesus.
Well, let me tell you this. Assassin's Creed, as over-milked as it is, they keep surprising me. I mean, okay, Assassin's Creed 4 was fucking fantastic. There is no... I mean, that is an amazing fucking game. It does not play anything like the previous ones, and it plays a little bit better than the rest. Now, Freedom Cry, which is their standalone game, which is also available as a DLC for Assassin's Creed 4, is even better. Because they took the core of Assassin's Creed 4 and made it, like, a very, very intimate and short... story-based DLC, which actually is, in a lot of cases, a lot more focused.
Yeah.
And it let's put it this way. It was so good that Ubisoft decided, we should sell this as its own game.
Yeah.
Which is great. So, I don't think... They could be over-milked, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's a bad thing.
I don't think... Let's look at Titanfall. It's kind of MMORPG-ish, right?
No, it's mostly, like, multiplayer only.
Yeah, if anything with that game, we probably won't see a follow-up anytime soon. What we'll see is probably like some map packs and expansions and things like that,
yes.
If anything. So I don't think that, and I think Destiny's in the same vein. So I
Destiny
think,
is more like in the vein of an MMO, since they keep saying that they have like a 10-year plan with that game.
Yeah, I think Destiny will be in the same context too. Watch Dogs, and what was the other one he mentioned?
Those are pretty much the three franchises.
Yeah,
that
I have no fucking clue. It's too early to tell. So next question though.
Okay. This is addressed to you.
Okay.
Do you still like the Rayman video game series, or do you not like the series anymore? And it's really difficult to read. Do you still like the Rayman video game series, or do you not like the series anymore due to the fact that you're not a fan of Western developed video games from companies like Ubisoft? Jesus. Giving a wrong impression.
Okay. Here's the thing. I don't hate Western games. I'm critical of them than most people are, but I don't hate them. And I have clarified this. Okay? I have clarified this over and over again. I do not hate Western games. Here's the thing. Some of the things that Japanese games get accused of, Western games get a pass by. That's what I've been saying, and you know this, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I don't hate Western games, okay? If I hated Western games, I would say I would not be considering goddamn Bioshock Infinite or fucking Tomb Raider. Or I'll even go further. If I hated Western games, Red Dead Redemption would not be in my top five favorite games of all time.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't hate Western games by any means. I am just a bit critical of them because, you know, they do the same, they have some of the same problems that Japanese games get accused of. As for Rayman, fuck no, I don't hate Rayman. By any means, I've always liked that series.
Mm-hmm.
So that answers that.
Okay. So next question. Do you guys think that both Japanese developed video games and anime both have a negative stigma? Sounds like something we covered. I ask because starting with the 7th generation of consoles, both of the two have had a lot of negative stigma. I guess he thinks that at the start of the 7th generation, Japanese developed games in an anime seem to have a lot of negative stigma. And specifically to you, Anthony, you're once a big anime fan, but not anymore.
Okay. That's the thing. I don't talk much about anime. I'm very picky of anime. Can I say that? I'm very, very picky of it. I find a lot of modern anime to be not very appealing. A lot of it's very, you know, I see a lot of schoolboy, schoolgirl stuff. If there's something else out there that's not that, you know, send it my way. But, I mean, I'm just not into it as much as I used to be. But if I do watch anime, it's stuff like, you know, I'll watch Macross, or I'll watch, you know, Akira, or I'll watch, you know, Neon Genesis. In fact, I still follow the Rebuild. I'm waiting for Rebuild 3.33. And I have bought some recent anime series. I bought the Persona 4 anime series. I have all of Yu Yu Hakusho on Blu-ray, which is fucking one of my favorites. So I still like anime. I'm just picky on it.
Mm-hmm. So it's interesting that you kind of have this like a relationship with anime, because this is exactly how I was describing to you how casual JRPG fans are with regards to seeing all these JRPGs that, by your word, they're all different, but from the outside, they all look the same.
That is true, though.
That is exactly how you are treating anime right now. You realize. Yes.
And I have conceded that point to you.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's the thing. It's just, I don't know, animes, you know, you had different art styles back in the day, you know?
But also different subject matter. Like, you know, to your point, you know, there's a lot of, like, you know, kind of, I don't know, like, doujin animes, and there's, like, there's animes where it's the stupid, like, Tenchi Muyo formula, but with a little bit of a twist, and, you know, a lot of these loli style, you know, animes. They're playing it safe right now, I feel. And I think that you know, it, with regards to those games and, you know, to video games that are Japanese developed, I don't necessarily think they have a negative stigma. I think what's really happening is that they haven't matured. I mean, we're talking about a country that was so used to being on top of video games for like a decade or so that all of a sudden, when things turned around and the West took over and had more sales, they just couldn't figure out how to penetrate the West. Right. You're still seeing this problem with Square Enix. They're still trying to figure out how to sell games over here. And they're still trying to figure out their expectations. This is a
about faster.
Well, no, and it's not just that. They're spending so much money on, like, better-looking games, thinking that, oh, that's what's going to sell, you know, their games. And then all of a sudden, Bravely Default sells more than Lightning Returns, and they're like, what? How the fuck does that happen? We spent half, or probably, like, less than half of the amount of, like, what we spent on Final Fantasy XIII Lightning Returns on Bravely Default, and yet that sold a lot more? You know, and it's really interesting. I think that a lot of the Japanese market has something to do with both Japanese tradition and what they've been used to over the past couple of decades. And but what's really fascinating, though, is that this gives room for smaller companies like Atlus to kind of just silently kind of creep into the limelight. You know, with, I mean, if you think about it, Atlus's past few years have been the most fruitful with Catherine, Persona 4 Golden, Persona 4 Arena, and you know, and just, and of course, Demon Souls. They brought that to the US. They're slowly kind of creeping in and saying, look, we're actually a pretty big deal, and we're not as bad, you know, of a business people as these other Japanese companies. You see these companies rise in power, just as, you know, just as how they change their business practices. And I feel that it is more of a business decision than it is the quality of their games, really. And because business decisions determine what's being greenlit, you know? Look at something like Ni No Kuni, which, you know, you didn't like, but
I didn't, no, I just never, I liked it, I just never played it. Again, it was in the 2013 era.
But if you look at that game, it was made by a very popular company. Studio Ghibli is a well-known commodity in the West and all that good stuff. But because of the virtue that it looked like every single other anime game out there, it was cast aside.
Yeah.
You know, it's easily cast aside. And
I thought it sold a lot.
It did, but it wasn't, you know, it probably didn't make enough to warrant a sequel.
It was a greatest hits, though.
It is, but, you know, again, I don't think they'll be partnering up anytime soon again.
Yeah, you know, probably not, but,
you know, but again, it's the reason why that company, you know, like, is like that is because they are a known commodity. But if you didn't even mention that, people will probably just lump that as the same thing, like, for you know, like, all the other anime games out there. So, kind of to answer your question, I suppose, it's like, it's a double-edged sword, right? Japan, right. Japan is known to have anime-style games, and unfortunately, that doesn't fly in the West too well because they look at that, you know, and then they say these are the same as X, Y, and Z, even though, as Anthony have mentioned before, they really aren't.
But to be fair, too, the same is said about shooters, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Big muscle guy. That cusses a lot and shoots things.
It's easy to homogenize games, especially when we get too much of them, you know, and really, like, you know, it goes both ways. It goes the same with the West and the same goes with the Japanese. In the West, it's the shooter thing, like what Anthony says. And in Japan, it's pretty much everything that comes out of Japan that looks like anime. So there you go. She has a rant request, but I'll let you read this because we don't really need to read it on the air.
Okay,
so.
Cool.
So pretty much, wow. So another pretty fruitful episode of Social Link today, Anthony.
Hooray.
This is pretty crazy. So if you guys have any more questions, comments, concerns, email us at sociallinkpodcast@gamerhorizon.com because we love reading your stuff. And if you have any questions or comments, and I keep repeating that, to like anything that we have covered in this episode or previous episodes of the podcast, email us, sociallinkpodcast@gamerhorizon.com. We'd love to hear from you because we love reading your emails, your fan mail, and whatnot. And if you have any thoughts, you know, or suggestions for like segments and stuff, like what, you know, Mike was suggesting in his email, email us, sociallinkpodcast@gamerhorizon.com. I think I've said that about enough times for you to kind of remember it. So until...
I don't remember it. I'm just joking.
You're an asshole. So until next week, we'll see you guys later.